swearing on for the cabinet that I'll ask the president to dissolve the 32nd Dáil. I've always said that the election should happen at the best time for the country. Now is that time.
And therefore, if that is achieved, that you do have the possibility of creating greater growth in the society and creating better jobs.
Are we certain that we actually have the critical mass of public infrastructure and public service capacity to ensure that we can keep this golden goose that we have and that we can actually be the family that makes future generations better off?
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
Welcome back to Business at the Ballot Box, a special general election podcast series brought to you by IBEC, the voice of Irish business. Each episode of this series features an in-depth discussion with business leaders, campaigners and policy experts with the data that you need that gets to the heart of issues impacting on you and your workforce. So far, we've featured interviews with Patricia King of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, Anne O'Leary of Vodafone, Dalton Phillips of DAA, designer and elder care campaigner Brendan Courtney, Danny McCoy of IBEC, and many, many more. And today, I'm going to be meeting Carolan Lennon, CEO of AIR, to talk about the evolution of Ireland's infrastructure, the need for planning reform, and why the homelessness issue is the number one on her list of asks from the government. And speaking of infrastructure, that is the big discussion on today's episode, specifically Ireland's transport and water infrastructure, and the fact that they are both under incredible pressure, and we talk about what it's going to take to release that pressure. On the panel, I am joined by Dervil Cummins, Director at ACOM, economist and commentator Colin McCarthy, but kicking things off is Neil Walker, Head of Infrastructure, right here at IBEC.
IBEC, the voice of Irish business.
I just focus on one particular area of infrastructure, and that is transport infrastructure. We could talk about the need for capacity in our airports, but I think most pressing for the vast majority of people would be the huge problem of urban congestion that seems to be getting worse and worse every year. There's plenty of money available now in the National Development Plan, but the sheer scale of development that's going on in the private sector, there's almost a crowding out effect, and there are increasing worries about whether or not we just have the managerial capacity to deliver all the public programmes that are now in the pipeline. There are a number of major road projects. For example, the Galway City Ring Road, which the first attempt to bypass Galway, which has the worst congestion in Ireland and some of the worst congestion in the whole world. I think it's number 70 of all cities in the world for how bad it can be. It's a medieval city. It's trapped between Loch Corrib and the sea. There are lots of special protection areas, all kinds of environmental impacts. The first attempt to bypass the city with a ring road was thrown out by the European Court of Justice on the Habitats Directive. So finally, years later, they're having another go at it. And Bob Planola is holding oral hearings next month. We will be participating. But it is a certainty that there will be also judicial review. And I don't expect a final decision on this for some time to come, but it's urgently needed. Unless you get the planning right, absolutely right, it is going to be challenged. And as Colin has pointed out, even when there aren't robust grounds for a challenge, often a judge will agree to an ex parte stay on a consented project.
I was thinking about the cost of delay that results from planning delays, from appeals, even the quite standard sort of infrastructure projects like roads, ordinary roads, not difficult urban roads, it takes 8 to 15 years from conception to construction, so they go on for a very long time anyhow. And if you introduce other delays, well, it creates more complexity, more uncertainty. It's been shown by a study of projects around the world that a one-year delay on a major project adds 4.6% to the capital costs. So if you've got a 1 billion programme, I'm not saying that the Galway bypass is quite that big, but it's not small. You know, that's 46 million extra every year. that the delay happens. So it's very complicated. It typically might have a couple of economic cycles, certainly three political cycles before you get a project through. So kind of tenacity in pushing things through and reducing the amount of uncertainty.
And when it comes to those delays, often as we spoke about, it's appeals, it's people saying that this is not the right thing for our region. And Colm, you've mentioned before that people have the right to a say but not to a veto. And is that the case? In Ireland, is that the way you see it?
Well, ultimately, people don't get to veto projects, but they can put up the cost a lot through going back to the planning system and the planning appeal system and on to judicial review, sometimes with points that have arisen before. And there doesn't seem to be a kind of a corpus of agreed case law which says that objection, generic objection to, say, high voltage lines or to masts or whatever, that generic objection has arisen before, it's been decided, there's a precedent, we're not going to entertain that. And more generally, it seems to me that, people are entitled to object to things that are going to discommode them. But when you get, as you did not so long ago, people from Wexford objecting to a development proposal in County Galway on grounds of intrusion and don't know how to look at this, locus standi is dished out very liberally in the Irish system.
What's locus standi?
Locus standi is very posh. It's Latin. It means the entitlement to be an objector.
As a citizen of a country, as opposed to necessarily a person who lives in an area that's going to be impacted.
Yeah, well, I live not too far from here. I have a right to object if somebody wants to build a steel mill in Harbour Park, which is just down the road. I don't really feel entitled to an opinion if somebody wants to build something like that in County Donegal.
Neil?
This is a bit of a constitutional minefield. I mean, there have been various attempts to make it that you have to have sufficient standing in order to make an objection. There was the classic case of a developer in Wicklow objecting to the Athen Rye data centre. Minister Murphy in the Department of Housing has tried to introduce a bill, but it's fallen because of the election coming up. But I could see something coming along afterwards. It was a Housing and Planning and Development Bill 2019, and it sought, if you like, to restrict the access to the courts. If it was an organisation, you had to have been in existence for a number of years. As an individual, you'd have to demonstrate a substantial interest. And that is effectively a filter. It is not clear to me that the courts would accept that, because case law is that there's a constitutional right of access to the courts. That said, there are other aspects of the bill that we would strongly support. So the IBEC view would be not to restrict people's access to justice, but rather to make sure that justice is dispensed with alacrity, because justice delayed for the developer is justice denied. And there are cases, it's not always the case, but there have been cases where it appears to have been a cynical delaying tactic that if you can frustrate the project and let the costs rise, as Derville has mentioned, eventually they walk away. That's what happened with Apple.
And obviously, Derville, as director of ACOM, and you've mentioned the cost of delay, of course, that cost is something that's going to make people not just walk away, but maybe not even want to apply for things in the first place, that maybe their money is better spent elsewhere.
I certainly think that's true of the private sector. It's true when you try to... So really, only government is willing to take planning risk a lot of the time. That's one of the problems with not that private finance in infrastructure is at all popular in Ireland at the moment. But one of the reasons would be in terms of infrastructure projects that only government has is willing to take on the risk and uncertainty associated with the planning system, because you wouldn't want to start investing in planning for a multi-billion project as a private sector without knowing when it was going to get its consent, when you'd be ready to start work, and maybe if in your company you had other opportunities in other jurisdictions or other sectors or wherever, really, that are good to go, that are shovel ready, as they say. So it does put people off, I would think, yeah.
There's another aspect. One of my regrets from the period back 2009, 10, 11, when I was involved in all the various cutbacks that had to happen, one of the regrets is that the capital programme was halted because the state was unable to finance itself, really, and all sorts of projects got abandoned or deferred, and some of them weren't very good projects anyway, and I certainly wasn't sorry, but a few good projects got stopped, one of which was the M20 from Limerick down to Cork. And the planning consents have lapsed. And now that the money is available again. And traffic fell. I mean, there was legitimate reason for slowing down some projects at that time because the economy contracted very sharply. But it's recovered now. It's been six years of recovery, really. But the guys have to go back to square one and seek all the planning consents again. Maybe there's an issue there. Derval made the point about the timescale of these public investment projects. Maybe the 5-year lapse period for these big projects is too short.
A bit short. Mm.
And is that so, Neil? Is that something that could be addressed?
It could. You just have to change the law. But
the simple matter of it.
Yeah. Now, that particular project, that road, it's ridiculous that we have all roads lead to Dublin, but, you know, the road between our second largest city and our third largest city, Cork to Limerick, is a country lane. In fact, people explore different country roads to go down to see if they can shave, and it's a dangerous route to take. But we are going to be waiting years for that road, probably 8 years, maybe more, of which half will be the planning, and probably the other half will be judicial reviews.
And in this case as well, the money is there, the will is there, yes. But yes, this is what's...
And the planning being done all over again. And whatever about the country lanes, anytime I travel that road, which not that often, you get stuck in Charleville and various other nice towns and villages along the way, whose citizens and retailers on the main street, their lives have been made a flipping misery by the through traffic trundling along. And it's not just a time delay for people travelling end to end. It's also the destruction of the economic and social environment in the towns in between. That project should have been finished a long time ago.
Along with the Dunkettle interchange, which is perhaps, after Galway, the single biggest bottleneck in the country.
Well, I think when you mention the Dunkettle roundabout, and I mean, not to say that a better connection isn't needed between Cork and Limerick, but the problem is when you build a big road, and then you dump that traffic on the edge of a city like Cork or Limerick, and you're in a situation of that junction and the Dunkettle and how you treat it on the edge of a city. And that is going to be the biggest challenge, I think, now going forward for that road. It's not the link between through the countryside has got its own set of problems, but when that traffic arrives in both cities at the other end, if it generates the amount of traffic that is intended to create, and the idea in Project Ireland 2040 is that it would help create better connectivity and grow the quite separate economies at the moment, Cork and Limerick, and so it would become one big economy. But then, but what happens in the urban environment when all that traffic arrives?
And that is, I totally agree with you. And that's why, you know, it's good that Cork has its metropolitan area transport strategy. Galway has a transport strategy. They need to be implemented in full. And if that means that, you know, at a simple level, the common good may entail annoying some local interests, whether it's widening of roads in Dublin to enable segregated cycle lanes. Does that mean taking away people's gardens? That is going to be hugely controversial. And yet without the radial flow in and out of Dublin, and without the traffic to be able to move smoothly within Cork and Galway, building wider roads itself can actually just stimulate extra demand for transport. It needs to be managed. So we have to have fully implemented metropolitan area transport strategies. They're going to be expensive, and they are going to fall foul, I think, of not just planning objections, but also judicial reviews. We need to support the Office of the Planning Regulator. The regional assemblies are doing regional spatial and economic strategies, but it's at the local level where the minister may have to intervene on the advice of the planning regulator to make sure that the common good prevails. We've talked a lot about the problems of the planning system, and I think that the next step, rather than legislation, needs to be to get the court service, the judiciary, the law society, the bar council to sit down and cooperate on how we screen judicial review applications at pre-trial hearings, how we can streamline the processing, particularly of planning related cases. We need to have a forum, not like a citizens assembly, but we need to get all of the people around the table and say, how can we make the thing run more efficiently? Because otherwise, Ireland being such an attractive country for infrastructure, and Derval's company produced a survey report in the last week or so, which shows that it's really important for 2/3 of companies doing foreign direct investment. And at the moment, it isn't an obstacle, but it is going to become one unless we fix this.
Okay, thank you, Neil. In just a few minutes' time, I'm going to ask you to move the discussion to water infrastructure, a matter of incredible urgency for the country right now. But first, we are going to hear from Carol Ann Lennon, CEO of AIR, who has an awful lot to say about the evolution of Ireland's infrastructure, the need for planning reform, and why the homelessness crisis is number one on her list of asks for the government. Stay with me.
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
My name is Carol Ann Lennon and I am the CEO of AIR. So AIR is, I think, 2 years into a 5-year transformation on the back of being acquired by new shareholders. And for the first time in a long time, telecoms shareholders with a long-term investment strategy for AIR. So we, as part of that new sort of, you know, transformation, we decided that we were going to invest 1 billion euros in our fixed and mobile networks. So that mobile network transformation is now well underway, and we have the largest 5G network in Ireland we launched this year. And our fixed network investment, we decided we were going to bring fibre to the home to 1.4 million homes and businesses in urban and suburban Ireland. And those first homes actually went on sale this week. The first homes passed. So making massive progress there. So great from an AIR point of view, but also from an Ireland point of view, because by the time we're finished that fibre to the home rollout, like, Ireland's going to be in the top 10, if not the top 5 countries in Europe for fibre to the home, sort of past, you know, homes, farms and businesses, which is fantastic. So lots going on the investment side from a network point of view.
Okay, so an incredibly busy and transformative last couple of years, last few years, let's say. Looking ahead to this year, 2020, and maybe the next couple, what is the big challenge for you? I know there's probably a multifactorial answer, but what was the big challenge looming for you, do you think?
For us as a company?
Yeah.
So I suppose we are, you know, we're telecoms and we invest big time in infrastructure. And this national fibre build is a massive bet for us, because this is the first time that we're going to offer our customers an alternative to cable, you know, in the big cities. So, you know, cable got to build a network with no competition from AIR. And now, you know, we're rolling in there and we're putting infrastructure in. And building infrastructure is risky. You know, it's very expensive. You know, you spend a lot of money today hoping for a return kind of tomorrow. So from a business point of view, I suppose the risk for us is, you know, that the regulatory landscape changes, and, you know, you make assumption today on what you can charge for that product, and then it changes in 2 years' time when you're still in the middle of the road. You know, as I always say, you know, networks are for life and not for Christmas. They take a long time to build and they take quite a long time to make a return on. So that kind of regulatory and sort of, you know, certainty as we roll out networks. And, you know, because you don't make any money on these networks for the first number of years as you roll them out. So the actual job of doing the physical rollout is challenging, although our team are the best in the country at doing that. So we will manage that. But then we need to get customers onto that network, both wholesale and retail customers. And we need that regulatory certainty to, you know, to make that happen.
What is that regulatory certainty?
So we need certainty on pricing. We don't want, you know, we don't want our prices to change in the middle of a rollout. We also need to, you know, you need to get permits from county councils. You need all that access. Some are much better than others. Some are, you know, whatever. But like, and also we need consistency of policy. So, for example, if you look at, on the mobile side, 5G, you know, if you look at the government's digital strategy, they talk, you know, I think there's hundreds of mentions of the word connectivity and the difference that will make for everybody. You know, and we're rolling 5G out. And the same level, we'll have county councils coming to us and saying, you can't roll 5G out in my area. So, you know, and what will happen there is those people will just be left behind. And they'll be the people in 3 or 4 years' time writing to me saying there's a black spot in my area, because that's what happened the last time. Because unfortunately, you know, when you get a network rollout machine going and there's a blockage or you can't get in somewhere, you just keep going and you go on to the next area. You know, so, you know, we need that sort of consistency of regulation and pricing and that kind of alignment between, you know, central government and local government around, do we want connectivity in all these areas? Well, if we do, this is what it requires, you know. So there's no point on one side beating up the operators because there's black spots and whatever, and then on the other side saying, well, actually, no, we don't want that in my county or in my local area. So yeah, we need to get alignment around those things.
So what would be your hope from the next government?
So I think a focus on business, a focus on infrastructure investment, because I do believe that, you know, that enables the country for years to come, and making it as easy as possible for these infrastructure projects, you know, to happen. I think that's from a business point of view. I think it's very hard to separate business and society. And I was thinking about this today, and, you know, there was some research last week that people were saying, you know, that Ireland is a worse place to live than it was a number of years ago. And, you know, and on the facts, that's not true. You know, we're healthier, we're wealthier, more of us are employed, we're better educated, et cetera, et cetera. So why do people feel like that? And I think actually the housing crisis, even if you're in a house yourself and you're absolutely fine, I think you look around at those photos and, you know, and families in, you know, in hotels or whatever, and people just feel, no, this isn't right. And I think that affects their mood, how they feel about the country. And, you know, so I think from a societal, and I think it'll also have a positive impact actually from a business point of view. If I was the government, that is the one problem that I would absolutely make sure that I solved.
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
Carolan Lennon of Ayr there, and we will be bringing you more short and powerful interviews with Ireland's business leaders in the coming episodes of this series. So back to my panel, I am still joined by Dervil Cummins of ACOM, Colin McCarthy, economist and commentator, and Neil Walker, head of infrastructure here at IBEC. And Neil, let's move to water and water infrastructure. Lay out the IBEC position on this.
The water infrastructure that we have is largely based on work done by the Victorians. And although there has been a huge ramp up in expenditure over the last few years, Dublin's water supply is on a knife edge. Now, we have barely any spare capacity whatsoever. Any kind of problem in any of the plants and you end up with rationing or quality problems. It means it's a risk to businesses, households alike. People just take it for granted. You turn on the tap and clean water will come out. But there is going to be a crisis unless we get a new supply for Dublin. Yes, we need to spend a lot of money on water conservation, but that will not be enough. Even if we can halve the leakage rate, even if we can reduce it by 2/3, and it gets harder and harder, there's three kinds of leaks. The big ones come looking for you. The little ones get reported. The small ones, you might not even know, but they are by far the greatest number. It's just seeping out. But we fix all that. But the growth in the population of Dublin and the eastern region has been such, and the projected growth is, that we cannot rely on the River Liffey for 80% of our water supply.
Which is what we're currently doing.
That's
now
where we are at the moment. So they've looked at options like desalination of seawater, very energy intensive. They looked at groundwater, but again, it's very limited as to what you can do. Irish Water have been looking at this for several years. They looked at about 10 options. They focused it down to 3 or 4. But fundamentally, water from the River Shannon has to be brought to Dublin. It's going to cross 500 landowners' property. And guess what? Some of them don't want it to. The other thing I would like to say is that the wastewater treatment that we have also has suffered from decades of underinvestment. We are being prosecuted by the European Commission for pumping raw sewage into the sea at not just a few locations, but at dozens. It is not Irish Water's fault. It is inherited a chronic problem of underinvestment. We need to spend billions. I mean, probably 12 to 15 billion euro has to be spent over the next decade. No utility has ever had to manage such a huge capital programme.
Dervil, time is running out.
So I think Neil makes a good point to bring up the wastewater, to be perfectly honest, you know. And perhaps if people aren't willing to pay for their water, they might be willing to pay for having their waste taken away. And that might be a different construct for a charging model that might be more palatable.
Well, Colm, would that be more palatable?
Well, the basic principle, I think, that one needs to pay for utilities that are delivered to your home, and fresh water is a utility that's delivered to my home. They also deliver cable television, broadband, electricity, and so on, so gas and so on. And I don't expect these things to cost me nothing. In rural Ireland, people pay for water. People have to join a group water scheme. I know farmers down the Midlands who've discovered that their flipping well is not as good as they thought it was. And they discovered that it costs $5,000 or $6,000 to sink a new one, which, you know, you have to do every 20 or 30 years, but you've got to pay. And there's this extraordinary idea that in the cities that people should get water for nothing, while happily paying the various bills that arise for everything else. I think the political system just bottled it on water, and we now have a wounded corporate structure for the water industry, where the industry doesn't have a significant revenue, and it's almost relying on an annual flag day at the Exchequer to fund this massive capital program.
It is quite messy that roughly 22% of its revenue will come from the business sector. The other 78% will come from the Exchequer, acting as an agent for 1.5 million households. But whereas normally with regulation like electricity networks, the regulator looks at the projects that the utility says it needs to do and decides whether or not there's a good case for them. And then it sets the charges, the user charges, that enable that to happen. In the case of water, unfortunately, it's a bit more complicated because the 78% that of the total cost that has to be met through the Exchequer, there is an absolute cap that the Oireachtas has said, we will pay 78% of the costs up to a certain level. And after that, no more. So it could be that projects that are very worthwhile and need to be done and would be done if 100% of Irish Water's revenues were through user charges may be constrained, because effectively you've got two regulators. You've got the Commission for Regulation of Utilities determining the charges paid by business, and then you have the Oireachtas, which may have a different agenda altogether.
Okay, so to wrap up today's discussion, Neil, what final message would you like to give listeners and the next government of Ireland?
We need to focus on the common good and not let local interests override the common good. On the issue of planning and judicial reviews, I think we need to bring together the stakeholders, the judiciary and the legal profession, and we need to sit down and sort it out once and for all. And the third area to do with water, we need to make sure that the way that the work of Irish Water is monitored and regulated economically is efficient and doesn't end up with confusion, because, you know, talking about trying to serve two masters can be very, very difficult.
Dervil, final word from you.
I think I support everything that Neil has said there. I think planning is so important. Good planning, good before you get to the construction stage. You know, address all the identify and address all the forthcoming objections, likely objections. I mean, project promoters have to go way beyond what's statutorily required of them to look to what the what they're going to face from people as they go through the planning inquiries, including, you know, the new generation of climate activists. There's a lot of known unknowns in the system that by doing enough project preparation, they can be really mitigated. And so it is up to your Irish Waters and other similar project promoters to really do their work and be as prepared as possible. There are enough unknown unknowns out there, so...
Got him, final word.
Yeah, I mean, a risk to the infrastructure programme that needs to be addressed is the usual Irish risk that we screw up along the way and that everything has to be halted because the government runs out of money and so on. And we've had this stop-go problem with the Irish Capital Programme since I was a kid. One of the threats to the programme is the scandals, I think, about huge cost overruns in things like the Children's Hospital and the broadband plan and so on, due in both cases to a failure to do project preparation and project assessment as per the public spending code. And I've been arguing for quite a while that it protects the capital programme if the public spending code is rigidly enforced, preferably on a statutory basis. It's not a minor matter if cost-benefit studies are being done carelessly, because it gives public investment a bad name. I really think that there's now a case, given that the government has taken a 20-year time horizon on all of this, to take the public spending code seriously and to say, in future, no project will be selected unless it passes a cost-benefit test done independently and not by the project promoters.
The government should make sure that projects are properly assessed, cost-benefit ratio, proper detailed due diligence. And I think that they've learned the lessons from that. So regardless of the outcome of the election, things are going to be very different in the future, and they need to be, because the National Development Plan talks about nearly 120 billion euros of capital investment, and we need to make sure we get value for money from that.
A very strong way to finish, a very strong message to the next government of Ireland by Neil Walker, Head of Infrastructure at IBEC, Derval Cummins, Director at ACOM, and Colin McCarthy, economist and commentator. Thank you very much for joining us for today's discussion. And that's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. And if you would like to be part of the conversation on Twitter and LinkedIn, use the hashtag BeTheVoice. And of course, you can also email us at info@ibec.ie. And please make sure to follow or subscribe to Business at the Ballot Box wherever you get your podcasts. We will be back tomorrow, the next episode, with Pat McCann of Dalata Group, economist and journalist Dan O'Brien, Mary Minahan of the Irish Times, and Gerard Brady, chief economist here at IBEC. Don't miss it.
Business at the Ballot Box. Be the voice.